Almost a year ago, this is how time flies. We all remember Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, right? Who appointed Special Counsel Robert Mueller to investigate the so-called Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Well, it was a year ago, on April 30th, that Rod Rosenstein resigned. Now, why would I even mention that? It's one of those all-in-the-family things. President Donald Trump, it turns out, threatened to fire CDC's Dr. Nancy Messonnier after her blunt warnings about the severity of the coronavirus caused the stock market to plunge in February. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Many of the details on the episode surrounding Messonnier were also reported in a lengthy New York Times investigation into all the times Trump brushed aside warnings of the severity of the coronavirus crisis, failed to act, or was delayed by significant infighting and mixed messages from his aides at the White House. All right, so he threatened to fire Dr. Nancy, who was giving those weekly teleconferences that Henry was always tuned into. One other note here, President Trump today lashed out at the media again, a special report that was given yesterday that said Centers for Disease Control Chief Dr. Robert Redfield had predicted for show a second wave of coronavirus that could be even deadlier. Well, it's not like everybody in the world has been saying the same damn thing. But Trump didn't like that because it doesn't help his reelection if people are thinking, well, September, October, November, we may be half dead. He said, Trump did, I do want to mention Dr. Robert Redfield was totally misquoted in the media about the fall season and the virus. Totally misquoted. I spoke to him and he said it was ridiculous. Said Trump today. Henry, welcome back. How was the Rose Garden briefing today? Fun?
It did not go well for the Donald. It was a lot of talk about the fall pandemic coming back. And him denying it, and it was, if it did come, it'd be like little embers, and they would stamp them out immediately, and it wouldn't be a problem, and it probably wouldn't come back, and nobody knows that it's going to come back. And you know, we talked about the comments that, Redfield made yesterday, and you know, his comments, as reported yesterday and as we discussed, was largely based on the COVID reemerging with the flu season, and that it would
simultaneously
the you know, medical delivery, because you'd have beds full of flu patients, and you'd also have beds full of COVID patients, and therefore you would run out of ICU beds. And that's what he was warning about. And the, you know, that was a possibility that they could both arrive at about the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's what was written in the Washington Post. And so Trump was saying, oh, you were misquoted, it's all fake news, The Washington Post is putting out fake news. CNN's putting out fake news. And so Redfield was there. So they called him up, and one of the reporters said, well, were you accurately quoted in the Washington Post story, which said exactly what we were talking about yesterday, that he was talking about the two outbreaks happening at the same time. And he said, yeah, the quote was accurate.
So, oh, he did?
Yeah. So he said,
oh,
no, Washington quote was accurate, but some of the media reports kind of, you know, left out the main point and just concentrated on that it was going to be worse in the fall, and didn't really delineate why it was going to be worse. And he said that, you know, one of the reasons he was mentioning that was because he wanted people to get their flu shot, so at least the flu outbreak wouldn't be as bad, and because it would not only impact medical, you know, delivery, because they would be overflowing with patients, but they could get mixed up also, and you know, the symptoms are very similar, so it'd be harder to diagnose the COVID, so the less flu the better. And
but he contradicted his boss, the Donald.
Well,
right there in front of God and country.
Well, it was a combination. He said that the Washington Post story, the quote, was accurate. And then he said that, you know, subsequent coverage kind of muddied it a little bit and it wasn't clear. And then he clarified what his, you know, his main points were. And then one of the reporters said, well, you know, that's what the Washington Post said. Were you accurately quoted in the Washington Post? And he said, yes. So I mean, the original story was accurately portrayed. And then they were complaining about the headline, the headlines that, you know, worse, you know, outbreak in the fall or something along those lines. And he had to read beyond the headlines to find out why it was going to be worse. But his whole argument was that it was going to be worse because you were going to have both outbreaks happening simultaneously, in contrast to what it was like this season, where the COVID kind of peaked after flu. So the flu B and the flu A were at already both peaked before COVID peaked. And so they were kind of, you know, separate outbreaks, and it wasn't as hard. It was hard initially to distinguish them, which kind of goes to the other story that came out today, which was that the first death, for COVID was really in Northern California, and it was in the beginning of February. So it was much earlier than up in the Seattle area, where the first, you know, the first official death was, and that was in late February. So it's about a 20-day difference between the two deaths. And what was more revealing about the first death is it was a woman who actually died at home, and she had no travel history. So that indicated that in January, the virus was already community transmission, right? And so it had come here, and it had flown under the radar, and they, you know, kind of hypothesized that, you know, it was flying on the radar because it came during flu season, and you know, generally people wouldn't have just, you know, noticed that there was a distinct respiratory disease during flu season. They were just assumed that she had the flu. And in this case, she didn't even go to the hospital, or didn't even go to the, I don't know if she went to the doctor or not, but she died at home. And, you know, apparently it took this long to figure out that she was positive. So it was kind of, I don't know. I didn't read the story to get the details on how the discovery was made, and whether they had actually collected any samples or what led to the diagnosis, and why it took this long to make the diagnosis, unless it's mm-hmm. just part of you know, there's been a lot of testing lately, and that might have been part of the testing regime, was to go back and look at you know, pneumonia deaths or, you know, respiratory illness fatalities earlier to see if any of those had symptoms and potentially if they had collected any samples that they still had stored and they could test those samples and find out. But somehow they identified two people in California. One was the beginning of February and the other one was towards the end of February. And I think both were prior to the first official death. So that indicated the virus was circulating in Northern California and long before, you know, it was even recognized that there were major issues and certainly long before community transmission was identified, which is always the problem with how they do the surveillance. And you know, because the surveillance is basically looking at people that came from China. Those are the only ones that are being tested. So, right. You know, if you have symptoms and you're not from China, you don't get tested. So even if she knew about COVID and thought she had COVID, he couldn't be, you know, confirmed because he would have to have a travel history from China to actually get the test. And so they may be expanding that, and now they're uncovering these types of these additional patients. And I think there'll be more of this. Actually, there's a program here in Pittsburgh, actually out of California. And it's with Google and I can't remember the other name, but they're actually doing screenings. So I'm actually going to finally get tested on Thursday by a company in California that's actually coming to collect samples in Pittsburgh.
You're healed. You survived.
No, I still got a little bit of a cough. I would not be surprised if I end up testing positive because there are
they're going to take you away and put you in the hospital. You won't be able to do your nightly reports.
No, I'm not that bad. Those that get identified, you know, weeks after they've recovered, they're positive on the PCR test, but they haven't really shown that they're really infectious, that people have been affected by patients that have recovered and still had evidence of the virus a month after the fact. And that's the category I would be in. I'd be in the category that I'm pretty much symptom-free. I still get a little bit of a cough, but other than the cough and sometimes getting a little bit tired, I don't have a persistent cough. And but I wouldn't. I mean, when I tried to get tested a month ago,
sure
I would have been positive. But yeah. Now it's kind of getting to the outer limits. But 10 o'clock Friday morning, I'm going to the parking lot in Monroeville to get a nasopharyngeal swab. So
just be sure they don't use a Q-tip on you. President Trump was very clear when he told me all about the difference between Q-tips and swabs.
Yeah, well,
very good.
They're going to have a long, long swab, the kind that he got that he really didn't like. But although it sounded like they had two different types of swabs, so I don't know.
It's supposed to be a shorter version now.
Right. And the description said they might use the longer or the shorter one. So I don't know for sure exactly what they're going to use.
Well, take some scissors with you and make sure it's short.
Yeah, well, it's just how far they want to stick it, into your nose to get the sample. But it's it is one of those deals where you never get out of your car and you come and go in the parking lot and
good.
You know, everything, the windows rolled up, and they, you show them your ID and your appointment. You know, they sent an electronic thing, so you can just show them your phone, and they read the phone and the ID through the window, and then you go, and eventually they roll down the window.
If they put you in the hospital, we'd have to organize demonstrations. Free Henry.
Yeah,
big placards.
It'll be an interesting story, because I was actually getting more information tonight since I'm actually going to get tested.
Uh-huh.
And
this is Friday.
Friday morning. They said 2 to 5 days to get results. But I went back and did retracing as to where the contact would have been, and the contact was coughing a lot, and she was from China. And I told my wife at the time, this was in January. This was the beginning of January, and she was coughing so much that my wife brought it up and said, I got this client, and she just came from China, and she's constantly coughing. And I said, well, is she from Wuhan? She said, no, I don't know. I'll check. And she asked her if she was from Wuhan, and she said, no, she's from Beijing. And never heard from her again. She asked if she was from Wuhan. And it turns out the company that her husband worked for had offices in Beijing and Guangdong province, and the province right next to Hubei. So, she, one of the offices was
eminently possibly a carrier.
Was next to Wuhan, right? And even if he was in Beijing, the ones that were at the office next door to Wuhan could have been infected and gone to the Beijing office. So, in any event, he did have this dry cough, and it was very, very noticeable and very, very frequent. And my wife developed symptoms, and then my daughter had symptoms, and she even had breathing difficulties, and we took her to the ER, and then I developed this cough. And so none of us have been tested, but I will be the first one to be tested, a little bit late, but it'll be an interesting story if it does end up coming up.
Yeah, all right, Friday. But tune in Friday and find out how Henry deals with being tested.
Well, that's when they're going to take the swab. It won't be till next week till I get any results.
Yeah, but if you were President Trump, you'd know in an hour.
Yeah, I know. Well, like I say, this is a California-based operation, so I don't know where they're actually. Well, I'm not sure where all their offices are.
They actually contracted with a California-based company to open up something in Pittsburgh.
Well, no, it's the other way around. The study is out of California. It's with Google, and I can't remember the other name, but they're going to several locations in California, but then they were going to about 4 different locations in Pennsylvania, and they're going to eastern Pennsylvania, and they're going up to Erie, and they're going here in the Pittsburgh area. I mean, I got to drive, but it's only 20 minutes away or so. Mm-hmm. But it's in Minnesota.
All right, well, that's a good,
Friday
Friday tale.
Well, that's Friday activities.
Here's a quickie. Speaking of the second wave, Trump's personal television news network and public relations firm Fox, Dr. Oz said in a story today, I guess it was more than just said, he was giving directions on people how to prevent being overwhelmed, that's a quote, overwhelmed by COVID-19 second wave. So if Dr. Oz says it's coming in a second wave, and people can be overwhelmed with it.
How do you avoid being overwhelmed?
Right. Anyhow, there you go.
Solutions.
So,
well, in any event, there were other things out of the news conference which are kind of related to these issues. There were two questions that everybody knew Trump was going to be asked, and was all kind of curious as to how he was trying to handle them. And the first one was on Rick Wright, who
Dr. Wright.
Basically, it's actually Bright. He's
Bob Wright,
BARDA.
I mean, yeah.
And he didn't want to go along with the the drug deals. Essentially, he didn't think it was a good idea to be promoting treatments for COVID that had not really gone through trials and spending
He's
a lot of money.
He's talking about hydroxychloroquine.
Right. And so he gave some pushback to promoting that when it hadn't really gone through any trials yet. And as a result of that pushback, he got transferred abruptly and out of BARDA and into NIH. And he thought it was because he was kind of drawing the line and was arguing that they shouldn't be promoting on tested drugs. And I think he's filed a whistleblower report. And so, of course, one of the reporters said, do you have any comment on, the story on Rick Bright, right. I think is his name. And what did Trump say?
What did Trump say?
Never heard of him.
I don't know the man. Heard of him. Don't know anything about
this?
Him.
Oh, he did this today. Oh, no. And he's kind of in charge of the vaccine program under BARDA. And he's fairly high ranking. And his opposition was to Trump. I mean, it was very clear what his opposition was regarding, and his transfer was very abruptly. He's a career employee, so he couldn't fire him, so he just transferred him to the NIH to work on something diagnostic or something. So that's essentially how he handled that. And then as far as the drugs concerned,
wait. Before you get away from Dr. Rick Bright, Trump actually said he never heard of him.
Oh, no. Yeah, he had no idea who he was. And he asked, when did he say this? And he said, this morning. Oh, no. I don't know anything about it.
That
was his response to that one. And then the drug itself isn't doing that well. And Dr. Oz is one of the promoters of the drug. And they did a study at the VA, of all places, on COVID patients. Mm-hmm. And they had the drug on one arm and a placebo, standard treatment on the other arm. And it not only didn't show benefit, that the ones that got the drug had a death rate that was double standard treatment. So it was actually
hydroxychloroquine, double the death rate?
Correct.
Wow.
So that wasn't, and so far I think they just talked about the study. It hasn't actually come out yet. But
not a banner day for Donald. No.
No, no. And it was, and you know, the difference, though, I mean, is what do you got to lose story was that, you know, it had been approved for, you know, malaria treatment, and it was to prevent malaria kind of thing. And, you know, that was for healthy people, and it wasn't for, you know, patients that had this virus that was creating, you know, abnormal heart rhythms. And one of the side effects of the drug is abnormal heart rhythm. So it's kind of like, well, that's one of the side effects, is it affects the heart adversely. And one of the problems with the virus is it affects the heart adversely, kind of in the same way. That putting those two together might not be the best combination in the world. And, you know, apparently, with double the heart rate, the death rate, I should say, you know, that may have something to do with it. It was relatively big. I think there were 325 patients.
Don't volunteer for medical tests with drugs, ladies and gentlemen. Don't do it.
Well, in any event, so it wasn't that good of a day for the Donald on that front. And and apparently, I don't know, apparently Fox has kind of stopped talking about the drug in the last week or so. And
can't find it anywhere. I looked.
Probably legal. Let's say there's a certain amount of exposure for commentators who have no medical background making recommendations for medications that have never been tried for a given indication, or at least never been tried, you know, in an official study, and it was an unproven treatment, and to be blasting that out to tens of millions of listeners might create some exposure if there are adverse effects. And if half of the people in the study, you know, that got the medication did worse than the ones that got standard treatment in the study, there probably isn't an exposure. But those who asked for it, they were basically, you know, offering it, you know, with people that had milder or even as a preventative. And I had mentioned before that.
Oh, these weren't seriously ill subjects then.
No, these were, but it's been touted, you know, for it's a wonder drug. It's for everything. It's for prevention. It's for milder cases, and it's for severe cases.
I see.
And some of them, I mean, one of the treatments that you have to add zinc, I guess, and Trump did that. He said, well, you know, you got to add zinc. You know,
I think Trump was taking it. I think he was taking it. I do.
Yeah. Well, in any event, that wasn't a banner day today in the press briefing.
Okay, we got several stories up. When you're done, go ahead. I got some things I want you to comment on. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to mention one of my sent, which was a story in the Washington Post regarding the blood clot. And
that's exactly what I was going to bring up. Go ahead. Good.
So that seems to be one of the issues with the virus. And there was some speculation that it's not the virus itself that's causing the blood clots, but it was really the host's reaction to the virus, and that they it's almost like a cytokine storm type of a thing, except it kind of draws on the body's defenses, and it kind of ends up taking some of the proteins that are involved with clotting the blood and overproduces it, and then it creates all these tiny blood clots, and that goes in the lungs, and that's what's leading to the breathing difficulties and the low oxygen supplies. It's these tiny blood clots all over the place. It's not really pneumonia, and that's what's creating the low oxygen levels. And it's kind of like the opposite of, you know, like Ebola, which leads to bleeding. This does just the opposite. Instead of it just leads to the blood clotting and forming all of these clots, which sometimes, you know, they cut loose and go to the heart, and they end up with a heart attack, or they go to the brain, they end up with a stroke. And so some of these patients that are dying at home may really be dying because they have these clots, and they throw the clot door, you know, either the heart or the brain, and they end up with a stroke or a heart attack. And that's what's creating some of these deaths that are going unreported, because they're dying at home, and they're, you know, initially just writing them up as heart attacks. And that was, you know, we'd mentioned this before in New York about the high number of emergency calls for heart attacks, and 76% of the patients dying were normal heart attacks. It's about half that rate. So they have this abnormally high death rate and this abnormally high frequency. That when things were, you know, the hospital were being overrun, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago
with cardiac issues. You saw what happened in New York. Cuomo, I guess, passed a rule, however he does it, that all paramedics responding to cardiac issues do not resuscitate. That caused such a backlash that he had to reverse that this evening. Now they can go ahead and try and resuscitate cardiac patients on emergency calls. But earlier today, they were forbidden.
Yeah, well, part of that was because they were just so overwhelmed, and then they would bring them to the hospital, and they weren't able to revive them there either, and they were swamped with other patients,
right.
So it was kind of like it was adding to the burden of the hospitals that were already overrun.
Can we do this, Henry? Can we go over that stroke thing again? That's important, and that's a big story. I don't know how many are involved with it, but the headline is COVID-19 causes sudden strokes in young adults. The novel coronavirus appears to be causing sudden strokes in adults in their 30s and 40s who are not otherwise terribly ill, doctors reported today. They said patients may be unwilling to call 911 because they have heard hospitals are overwhelmed with coronavirus cases. There's growing evidence that COVID-19 infection can cause the blood to clot unnaturally, and stroke would be an expected consequence of that. Dr. Thomas Oxley, neurosurgeon Mount Sinai, gave details. All were under the age of 50, and all either had mild symptoms of COVID-19 or no symptoms at all. The virus, said Oxley, seems to be causing increased clotting in large arteries, leading to severe stroke. Now, that's not good. Severe stroke is not something you recover from in a couple of days. Doesn't happen. It's damaged.
Yeah,
I had
heard other emergency room physicians saying that it was clogging up the machine. So the machines that were the blood was circulating in, or maybe
ECMO?
It was even the ventilators.
ECMO machines.
It could have been the ECMO too. I don't remember what it was, but it was like all the machines were failing because they had all these blood clots in them, and so it sounded like it was just serious problem. You know, it wasn't just an occasional patient. It was a lot of the patients had this problem. And I know that here in eastern Pennsylvania, one of the things that was noticeable was the large number of hospitalized patients that were younger. There were a lot that were in their 30s and 40s that were in the ICU and COVID positive. And it was unusual that so many younger ones were in such serious condition. And that might be related to the clots also. And they also said that apparently wasn't that new. There's probably some evidence of it in China as well as in Italy, but that in the U.S., they're just more attuned to looking at cardiac issues and would be picking these up more readily. And I remember on Twitter, they had doctors that were caring for these patients would have EKGs that basically looked like they were having a heart attack, and they said it was just the response, the stress from the virus. But they were kind of alarmed that they got one patient after the other came in, and actually the relative it was related to my wife, her nephew, had gone into the hospital emergency, and they said, well, we're getting ready to send him home. He just has this issue atrial fibrillation.
AFib?
It looked like that was a congenital problem. And his doctor was a cardiologist, and he said he doesn't have any heart problems. He recovered. He's been discharged already. I mean, he wasn't in there that long. But actually, they were going to discharge him ahead of time because of that. And when they said he didn't have any heart problems, they kept him a couple extra days. But he had that also. With AFib on, and he was relatively young, he's in his 50s or so. So that was another example where he went in and his oxygen levels were starting to get a little bit low. That's why he went in, and he had these cardio issues. It does seem to cause a lot of problems. A lot of problems that they're not used to seeing.
One final note. This Dr. Oxley at Mount Sinai in New York shows a sevenfold increase in the numbers of sudden strokes in young patients during the past 2 weeks. Seven times over. Normally, they have 1.4 incidences every month for people under the age of 50. And now it's up 700%. So something's going on. Something's going on. And if you get sick with this, I don't know go ahead.
And were they tested? I mean, are they COVID patients, or they just noticed an increase in younger people with strokes?
That's the story. Just an increase in strokes. Hold on. Let me see if it does say anything. I'm looking. All were under the age of 50, and all had either mild symptoms of COVID-19 or no symptoms at all. It says nothing about being tested. It says there's growing evidence that COVID-19 infection can cause the blood to clot. But that's as close as I can give you to testing.
So that's what I'm saying. I think there are a lot of unreported cases. I mean, they're reported as strokes, or they're reported as heart attacks, and in many cases they're probably reported as deaths. But they're kind of flying under the radar as far as being COVID direct death. And that's what another study that was looking at deaths that were just reported, and they had nothing to do with COVID, just for an area that had a lot of COVID cases. And you would see this spike. You'd see the normal death rate, and all of a sudden there'd be this spike in deaths, and it just stood out. And they were not being reported as COVID deaths. They weren't being tested. They were just, you know, sudden deaths that kind of happened. And they were probably being reported as heart attacks. And I see some of these. I mean, this is how bizarre some of the reporting is. I think in Kansas has two categories. They have one category that says had COVID and died, and another category of died with COVID, but not due to COVID.
Right.
So they're taking people that are COVID positive who have a heart attack, and they're saying it's not a COVID case because they had a heart attack. So they died of a heart attack and not pneumonia.
No.
And so they're not really a COVID case, even though they tested positive for COVID. And the gap between the two numbers is pretty big. You know, it's not an insignificant number. It's like, you know, they've got 100 deaths and 60 of them are due to COVID, or 70 of them are, you know, it's like 30% of the deaths they have are they're trying to say is not due to COVID. And I would bet that they're either saying, well, they were a heart attack or stroke, and that's what happened to them, and didn't have any. It's just a coincidence that they
too many cases
were infected. Right.
You got 12 heart attacks a day, and then you're getting 70 to 80 a day.
Right. No. Right. And I'm hearing rumors, and I think they're from people that actually watch Fox. So apparently, they're saying there that they're over. They're just flipping it on its head. And they're saying they're overestimating the COVID deaths because there's people that are infected with the virus and they get a heart attack and they say it's because of COVID. And it's really they just had a heart attack, and it's not really the death isn't really due to the virus. It's just like flu. You know, it's not really that serious. And it's overhyped. And you know, the fact that they were dying, you know, they just happened to have a heart attack while they were infected. So that's how the data just flipped on its head. And like you said, you can just look at this sudden increase in strokes and heart attacks in patients that either have COVID or are from an area that's got a lot of COVID cases. And because of many of the the patients, the fatalities are not tested. Mm-hmm. You know, they just get a call that sounds like he's having a heart attack. The paramedic comes and the patient's already dead, and that he died of a heart attack, and they go straight to the morgue and they never get tested.
This is a new, relatively new development, this heart and stroke thing in the last couple of weeks. I don't like this at all. This suggests some kind of variation in how the virus is attacking people. If people get coronavirus, they're going to, I would worry, what am I going to do to try to prevent stroke? What can I do? These are questions that I have no answers for, but this is not a good thing.
Sounds like it may very well be a variation of what happened in the 1918 pandemic. And the 1918 pandemic was, you know, it was younger people that were dying, and they were dying because of, you know, a cytokine storm. So they had a healthy immune system, and the healthy immune system went and caused problems because it was attacking the virus, and it mounted a very strong response to the virus that then spilled over and ended up attacking the cells that the viruses were in, and that caused all the cell damage, which led to
major organ failure.
And so here's the same thing where the people that are at most risk for this, most at risk, are younger people with a healthy immune system, meant is basically this vigorous response instead of, you know, turning into anaphylactic shock or something along those lines. It's turning into just abnormal clotting of the blood, and the blood clots end up causing the damage part to the heart or the brain, and that's what
this is going
to
have to be addressed quickly. This, if this continues, and I see no reason why it won't. Here's another good question that came in. The first one tonight, actually. The COVID test, the one you're going to get Friday,
right,
does it specifically identify COVID-19, that virus, and its 30-some variants, or does it test for all coronaviruses?
No. Okay. Just to clarify, this is an easy question. It's an unambiguous answer. That way back when they first started, and they didn't really have, you know, well, they had the sequence, but they didn't really have a test that was specific for the virus. They used a pan-coronavirus test. So,
generic?
Right. So it was against a conserved region, and it would pick up any coronavirus. And what it was picking up were children. Children were coming up positive. I think they were using it in the Philippines. They were using it in countries that didn't really have the specific test at the time. And they were getting these positives, and they would send it out for a more specific test, and they would end up coming up negative. And the reason they came up negative is because they had a coronavirus, but they didn't have the SARS-CoV-2. The test that's run now is universal, is actually targeted so that it's a region of this virus. There's actually multiple regions where this virus doesn't match the other known coronaviruses. I mean, that's one of the benefits that came out of the SARS outbreak. And the SARS outbreak, it was a novel coronavirus, and the sequences were known, and you could see what was the same with this, with other coronaviruses, and what was different. And that's how, you know, new coronaviruses were identified, by taking the region that's the same, and it was mostly done in bats, and they could go to bat caves and pick up, you know, the bat poop and extract the RNA and take a probe that would pick up any coronavirus, and they found all these coronaviruses in the different classes, including SARS 1 and 2. I mean, that's where SARS 2 came from. It was also from that. But for this test that's being done, these positives, are identified with a probe that's specific for this virus, and B, for places like New York, there are literally hundreds of viruses that are fully sequenced, and the entire sequence is on deposit. I mean, GSAD's got 11,000 sequences now. So just there were zero a couple of months ago. So just since this outbreak began, and they didn't really start getting samples in quantity until like March. So literally in the last 4 to 6 weeks, there have been 7,000 or 8,000 sequences that have been deposited. So they not only are positive on the PCR test, that they actually sequence the entire genome, and occasionally they just do a partial sequence, but you know, it's all the same virus. And the different variants are, I mean, all that's going to do is potentially give you a false negative if you end up getting a change where the primer binds to the genome and it's changed, then the primer won't bind and you'll get a negative. Not going to give you a false positive. So the positives are all this virus. This virus is all over the place. This virus was here in January, long before there was any, you know, ban, and the ban wasn't effective anyway. the virus has been here for a long time. It's all over the place. It's the same virus. They're basically three different lineages, and within each of those lineages, there's all this variation. So when they do a test and they say, you're positive for SARS-CoV-2.
SARS 2.0.
Question.
Right.
If you want SARS 2.0. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's the virus. It's not all of a sudden they're getting all these cold viruses, and there's an explosion of cold viruses, but it isn't even season anymore. I mean, the season for cold viruses was in January, February, and spilling over to March. By April, those are all pretty much gone, and this one's around because it's a novel virus and it's got a brand new host that doesn't have any immunity, so it can hang around a lot longer. And a lot of people that are moving that virus around meatpacking places, for instance, where they're shoulder to shoulder, and it transmits very easily.
One more quickie, real quick.
Okay.
Aspirin to help prevent blood clotting if someone's sick with coronavirus?
Possible? I don't know. I don't give medical advice.
No, we don't do that here. But I mean, I'm just putting it out there on the table for you doctors listening.
Yeah, I would, I don't know. You know, it's kind of like, it may
we
be
don't
at
have
the
to
level
go there.
Where it's kind of overwhelmed the typical dose of aspirin anyway.
Correct.
Because it's not like you have one or two clots. I mean, all these organs are full of clots. So,
not good.
I'm not sure not how good. Effective aspirin is.
All right. Well, it's just a thought.
Abnormal situation.
We put it out there for all of you out there who may be interested in that. Think about it. Maybe it'll have some effect. Henry, thank you. Talk to you tomorrow night, the day before your big test.
Yeah. Okay. I'll keep you posted. Okay. Take care.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, Dr. Henry Nyman, thank you for being here tonight. We'll be right back with you tomorrow night. Take care, be safe, and eat good food. See you tomorrow.